You are listening to the Slow Living Podcast, and I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day. What if I told you that you could truly have the life of your dreams, the life you've always wanted, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose? It's absolutely possible, and I see it each and every day with my coaching clients. It all starts with learning how to slow down. You deserve to live the life you've always dreamt about. Let's get started. Hi there, Slow Down Society. Steph here, and we are on episode 129 of the Slow Living Podcast, and I'm thrilled to have Lisa Steele with me today. Lisa is amazing. Lisa lives in rural Maine, and she is the owner and operator of the Fresh Eggs Daily website and cookbooks. She's the host of the Welcome to My Farm television show, and she is a fifth generation chicken keeper. Lisa, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Stephanie, thanks for having me.
So Lisa and I have been in each other's circles on and off for many, many years because we are bloggers and cookbook writers. And recently I reached out to her and wanted her to come on because a lot of people, when they talk about slowing down, they think immediately that means like they have to go back to like Little House on the Prairie time and buy chickens. And so I want Lisa to tell us a little bit of her story and how she got started. But then also, if you're tuning in to get the answer of whether or not you should buy chickens for your backyard, we will answer that for you here today. So Lisa, thank you. Thanks for joining us. So fifth generation chicken keeper to like huge, like I wish I could explain how big your website is that you started with no money down. And then also to cookbooks and a television show. So how did this life trajectory pan out for you?
Yeah, it is really funny. I mean, I've done actually some talks at conferences and things on building a brand as well, which is not what I intended at all. You know, we had moved out to the country. I used to work on Wall Street, and that really wasn't me, but it was fun. But I had chickens as a kid and lived in the country. And 2009, homesteading was big, like you're talking about. Everybody was getting goats and canning everything they could and doing all this stuff because of the recession. And so I started raising chickens, and Facebook was pretty brand new, I think, for business pages and people that weren't college students. And so I started posting pictures of my chickens, and my friends said, like, one more chicken picture and we're just not going to be friends with you anymore. So I just kind of picked the name Fresh Egg Daily out of a hat, started a business page, and started posting my chicken pictures there. And people started asking me questions. And at that time, there wasn't a lot, you know, there weren't a lot of books about backyard chickens. It was more on the commercial scale. And so people were looking for information, and I started answering the questions as best as I could from what I knew from growing up. And then I did a ton of research, subscribe to every chicken magazine, and learned what I could, because when you're a kid, it's not the same as when you're an adult and you're completely responsible for them. I mean, I didn't really know the ins and outs of it. I just knew we had to clean the coop and collect the eggs and, you know, bring the chickens out, the kitchen scraps and whatever. And I think from the beginning, I knew I wanted to do it naturally, where we were going to be eating their eggs. Yeah. So just like I don't grow a garden and then spray Roundup all over it, or Miracle-Grow, I'm not going to raise chickens and give them antibiotics and all kinds of chemicals and things. So I started really leaning into what kind of herbs they could eat and how I could just try to keep them healthy without antibiotics and all that kind of stuff. And I think that was the kind of the message that really resounded with people, because nobody was really talking about that. And there weren't a lot of studies and all that. So that's how I kind of started off early on and started writing my blog. And within, I think, 2 years, I got my first book deal, and then went on to write pretty much a book a year for like the next 8 years, which while I was in it, it didn't really register. It was only afterwards I looked back and said, I've been writing books pretty much constantly for 8 years. And with that, you know, Facebook grew. I was just kind of lucky at the right time when Facebook was really booming, and my page just grew immensely. And then, you know, I started Instagram and YouTube and the whole deal. And then kind of during COVID, I kept asking my editor, I wanted to write a cookbook, and he really wasn't into that. He just wanted me to keep writing chicken books. And, you know, after six books, I really didn't have a lot more to say about chicken. So I ended up, I mean, I didn't.
I know that feeling, Lisa.
Crock pot, right? Just put crock pot in place of chicken.
How many pot roast recipes does the world really need?
Exactly. And I just would have been rehashing and all this. And I really was honestly tired of it. So he graciously let me out of my contract with them. I hired an agent, pitched a cookbook, and I ended up getting a cookbook deal with HarperCollins, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. And my cookbook came out in 2022, which then I kind of have pivoted more into the culinary world and started talking more about eggs, because I think eggs are fascinating. Just all the things about them, how to cook them, but also just everything having to do with eggs. And it's really been kind of, it's been a reset for me, because honestly, if I did one more podcast, you know, talking about how to get started with chickens. So then I had a break from that for like 2 years, and that was great. Yeah. And now, I mean, I still love to talk about chickens.
Yeah.
But I did need a little variety in my life.
You do, but what is so interesting is listening to your story, that you were doing fine. Like, you were on Wall Street, you had money, we're going to put money in quotes because I don't like to share financials and I don't think it's anybody's business in any way. But like on paper, it was all good.
80s. Yeah, it was the 80s. So,
yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so it was probably very good.
It was very good. Yes.
Yeah. Minus cocaine. Stay away from cocaine.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, the more you make, the more you spend, you know, it's not a cheap lifestyle either. So it's all relative. And I think that's what holds a lot of people back, because I get so many email, or even my friends, you know, say, oh, I wish we could do what you did. I would love to live on a farm. I would love to, you know, and it's like, when you step back and you're not commuting every day and buying lunches and buying pantyhose and dry cleaning and all this other stuff, and you can cook your own meals, and, you know, you have time to clip coupons and whatever, your lifestyle becomes a lot more affordable. And maybe you don't need to be making all that money, or you don't need two incomes, or, and I think people maybe just don't look at it the right way, because it is very doable.
And it is doable. And I'm actually really glad that you said that. And you said that friends have spoken to you in kind of a wistful way of, oh, I wish I could do this, and oh, I wish I could do that. And then you also touched upon luck and how you were quote unquote lucky and timing with the start of the site and with Facebook. I mean, talk about it a lot in The Psychology of Money, in that when you are aware of the here and the now, lucky things happen because you're aware. And my hat is off to you that yes, maybe the step-by-step paint by numbers, this is exactly what I did and you can do it too, isn't applicable, but being aware and present and being ready to take that next step when opportunity arises is exactly what you did. So you didn't have this, like, I'm going to do all of this on my farm and write cookbooks and have a very profitable website and have a television show. You didn't have that inkling, but you also knew what I was doing. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to start paying attention to the breadcrumbs that sort of appear, and you followed them. And that's, to me, what slow living is all about. So I just think you're absolutely phenomenal.
That's right. I do actually have a degree in business management with a minor in accounting, which, you know, at the time it was wonderful for Wall Street, got me my job and all that, but it has been invaluable for what I do, because I have turned it into a business. And so I don't do our taxes anymore, but at the beginning I did our own taxes. You know, I know how to balance a checkbook. I know how to budget. I know with my product line launching it, I know cost of goods and profit margins and all those kinds of things that are really important, because business comes in all different shapes and sizes. And if you are a blogger, you are running a business. I mean, you have to know your expenses versus your income, your ROI, things like that. And so it's been a very creative way for me to use my college degree, so my mom doesn't feel like, you know, they sacrificed for nothing, so I could just sit at home and raise chickens. But honestly, I did not go into it thinking it would turn into a business. I was, we were living out in the country, jobs, you know, we were living in sort of rural Virginia, and there weren't a lot of jobs that were, you know, paying much more than minimum wage. And to drive, you know, 40 minutes to a job making, you know, $12 an hour or something wasn't, and it was a basic, you know, a bookkeeping type thing. So to go from, Wall Street of bookkeeping wasn't really for me. So I was kind of sitting at home just bored and with nothing to do. And so the chickens were really a welcome hobby, I'd say. And then realizing how many people really, wanted to know about it and wanted to learn about it. And it's funny because it's almost like Groundhog Day now, because I started 2009, a lot of people started at the same time. And a lot of those people are still with me, but they're not with me to learn anymore, because they kind of learned along with me, but they're there just because we've gotten to become friendly, or they enjoy the whole lifestyle. But then COVID hit, and it was like 2009 all over again, because I was answering all the same beginning starter questions again. So it was almost like a rewind back. Whereas I would get more, I'd say, advanced questions, after doing it for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, I wasn't seeing so many beginners anymore. It was the more advanced things, or, just chatting. So it's been interesting to almost go back to the beginning, and now we're starting a lot of people brand new again.
Well, that's so I have found that with the cooking site also, that things come in waves, and it makes sense because there's this new generation being born all the time, and then they and older people get nostalgic and want to reintroduce the younger generation into the times. I mean, we saw it with, I don't know, like the Penny Gazette and Depression era cooking and all of those things kind of cycle through. What's interesting, I like how humble you are in that you sort of dismissed me telling you how phenomenal you were. But I want to highlight that, because what happens is people listen and they think, oh, well, I can't do that because I didn't go to school for business, and I don't have a degree in this or that. The thing is, though, is the platform that Lisa is on is Blogger, which is the for free blogging software that Google has, and she has created millions and millions of dollars on this free platform, and I personally still use that one also. So yes, I think it's phenomenal that you have a degree in business and you've pivoted it, but also don't let that hold you back. If you have an obsession and you want to turn a hobby into a business, you don't have to know the end right now. You just need to know what the next step is. Does that make
That's
sense,
very
Lisa?
true. Yes. And you need to know your strengths and weaknesses, because, so for example, yes, I am still on free Blogger. Number one, because I'm sort of cheap in many ways. And number two, because I don't know coding, and I didn't know any of that. And a woman who worked for my husband in the IT department offered to set me up on a blog, because again, this was a hobby. So she set me up on Blogger because it was free. And now, what, 12 years later, I'm still on Blogger. And if I had a
That's why
title,
we're friends, guys, because we're both naturally frugal, and we have the idea, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Like, why?
well, exactly. And if I had a dollar, if I even had a penny for the number of times other bloggers, whatever, have said to me, you really need to be on WordPress if you want to be taken seriously. And I'm thinking, I've got 7 books, a TV show that's in its second season. I'm pretty sure I'm being taken seriously. I've worked with national brands. I mean, the platform you're on doesn't matter. And for me, it was invaluable, because I am a tweaker, and I'm always, kind of like OCDing things. And if I had a site, I have worked on WordPress sites. Like, I did some freelance writing for some magazines, and they all use it. It's impossible to figure out. And for me, Blogger was just easier, because if I wanted to change the color of my links, or if I wanted to change this photo, I can do it pretty easily. So you have to know your strengths and weaknesses. Like I said, I am an accountant. I was a CPA. I hired an accountant 2 years ago, because it had gotten to the point where, no, I can't keep up with all the tax laws. I don't know, the ins and outs, and they're changing. And for me, it made sense. Like, you have to know what you can do yourself, what your strengths are, and then what you need to either hire out or learn or whatever, because everyone doesn't have the perfect skill set for everything.
Same. The Crockpot site is on Blogger, and then stephanieoday.com is on WordPress. And I too am a tweaker. And if I have an idea at 3 a.m. and I want to get out of bed and do something, I can do it
You
on
want to do
Blogger.
it.
I can
Exactly.
do it. But if I have an idea on the WordPress site, I have to contact my site designer, because every time I try and do something, I break the code.
Same. Yep. Same. And you're paying. You know, I'm in a lot of blogger
I
groups,
know.
and it seems like their focus is, I need this plugin, or this plugin's not working, or my host this, or my host that, or whatever. I mean, I pay, I think, $10 a year for my domain.
I know, me too. So also, I too have been on television the way you have, and my site never crashed, even though Good Morning America sent 90,000 people to my site in a few hours. If I was on a self-hosted domain, it would have crashed. So,
Right.
yeah.
Oh, my site has not been down, other than when, you know, my Julie, who does, you know, like high tech things for me, she took it down because we were doing something or redirecting or whatever. But my site has never gone down, not for even an hour that I'm aware of in 12 years.
Yeah. No, it's lovely.
It's
because I know you sell products. Do you have Shopify? Like, how are you doing your shopping cart
No,
on
it's
Blogger?
all, it's through, I sell through Amazon and Chewy. So we ship, my manufacturer ships directly to them. I sell signed books. I tried for a while to have like a PayPal, you know, pay button, whatever, but I just have an Etsy shop. I tried standalone sites a couple times. They will never, shouldn't say that. It's very difficult to drive, even with a huge following, it's very difficult to drive traffic to a standalone shopping site. Etsy gets great Google search results and also has a ton of organic foot traffic. So having an Etsy shop, it's not just who you're sending to that shop, but it's definitely worth it. I mean, they do charge fees, but again, you have to pick and choose where you're going to spend your money. And for me, Etsy is just easier.
Thank you for satisfying that nosy stuff question, which
Yeah,
might not have
absolutely.
been super interesting to the rest of the slowdown society, but I wanted to know, Lisa. When it comes right down to it, we all just want to climb into bed each night feeling calm, content, and at peace. We want to know that we were able to keep all the balls in the air and were productive without neglecting our own needs and wants. I know. I get it. That is why I recorded a free masterclass on the 10 things happy, successful people do each and every day, and I'd love for you to join us. Learn simple and practical tips to reclaim the sanity and joy in your home and family at stephanieoday.com/masterclass. So you had a resurgence of people who were home during COVID and they wanted to like get in touch with their domestic roots, and they wanted to buy chickens. And I know that there was an egg shortage at one time and a this shortage and a that shortage during COVID. Are you finding now that since people are back in the office, there's not as many people trying to homestead in their backyard?
I think I heard at one point during COVID, one of the hatcheries business was up like 500%. So I don't think we're seeing that huge, I mean, like chicks were selling out immediately, you know, I don't think we're seeing that huge surge, but I don't know that too many people that started raising chickens have stopped. You know, I think they found out how easy it was. And once they went back to work, and a lot of people are still working from home or working short weeks or whatever. But once you get established, you can have chickens and work, you know, so I don't know that it was a fad and people have given up on it, but I think it has. I think anyone who was on the fence about getting chickens got them during COVID because of food shortage in general, being home, all this other stuff, you know. It's very, I don't know what the word is, but like, it's very comforting to know that if tomorrow we could not leave our property for whatever reason, that we could feed ourselves. You know, we have chickens, they lay eggs. I know how to garden. And I think that's a very comforting thought. And I think that even if it never came to that, I think a lot of people just felt like the more that they could bring into their backyard, like, we will never starve. You know, we wouldn't have to be out shooting like wild turkeys or whatever, you know, or eating sticks and twigs. So I think that just level of, you know, you feel like, okay, I can feed my family. I can, you know, not back to the pioneer days, but
No,
We
it's a
do have
sense
a
of
source of food.
sufficiency. Yeah.
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 Self-sufficiency. So if someone is listening to this and they have the idea that I've always wanted to have chickens, but we don't live in rural Maine with property, and I live in a suburban tract home, is it a
Right.
possibility?
Oh, absolutely. And so many more suburban and even urban areas are allowing chickens. A lot of times they limit it to five, which, for a family of four, even five chickens will be fine. They'll, probably lay enough eggs for you. No roosters, which you don't need a rooster for your chickens to lay eggs. And five chickens doesn't need a coop much bigger than a dog house. So if you think of like a typical dog house and maybe a dog run, a dog kennel around it. Not that that is like predator proof, but that size footprint for five chickens, that's really all you need. And to get started with five, it's a good number, it's manageable. You'll probably get 4 or 5 eggs a day, for a couple of years. I think in some ways, social media and all the information out there, way more than was back in 2009. I think in some ways it's made it easier because information is more accessible. But in some ways it's made it harder because it's so loud and noisy and there's conflicting opinions and who are you listening to and what kind of credentials do they have? And so you get confused because you look for something and there's 15 different viewpoints and then you just, so I think it's overwhelming now. I think there's almost too much information on every topic, not just chicken keeping, but like every topic. I think there's too much information out there. And I think people just give up because it's just too much.
Well, and it's that kind of information overload, and then that kind of creates this feeling of overwhelm, like, well, I can't figure out the quote unquote right way to do it, so I'm
Right.
just not going to do anything at
I'm
all.
not going to do it. Yeah. And it's like, as we were talking before we started recording, it is kind of frustrating. And there's also the, I actually, I did a YouTube video once, everything I know about raising chickens in 12 minutes. And it's still out there somewhere. And I think, I mean, myself included, we have to keep creating content because if you want people to keep reading your blog, you need to keep creating new content. I have over 700 articles on my blog. In all reality, I mean, I probably could in 20 articles, probably not even 10. I could probably write 10 very well constructed articles and teach you everything you need to know about raising chickens, maybe even one. But you just have to keep creating content for the sake of creating content. And so now I'm making herbal garlands and I'm making my own fly spray and I'm, just anything I can think of to write a new post to get out more content. And that muddies the waters up too,
Yeah, it does. And I'm actually really happy to hear you say that, 'cause I get in those kind of like spirally thought patterns of what, why? I mean, like, and I get it. It's clickbait of the five things you need to do right this very second, and if you don't, you're failing at life, like kind of thing, which isn't true. In any way, but you're right. That is the nature of the beast and the internet. And when you live your life online, that sort of feeling like you just need to constantly produce, produce, produce. So,
Yeah, and why? The world does not need another, recipe,
yeah.
article, whatever. And I mean, I'm guilty of it just like everybody else. But I've tried to cut back. I mean, I might write like one new post a month. Or I mean, I used to write two or three a week on schedule, like Sunday, Wednesday, whatever.
Yeah.
And then after a couple hundred articles, I just didn't have anything more to say, like with the
Yeah.
books. So now I write something when it's either a question that people have been asking me that I haven't covered, or something that I'm interested in that I want to research, and it's become more of a, I really do think this needs to be put out there instead of, I'm going to write something on Sunday regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. Do okay, this is gonna sound weird, but I just always wondered because I haven't owned chickens. Do people think of them as actual like pets, or are they livestock? Like how do you think of them? Like Sheldon, my dog, like that's part of the family and he's my baby. But I don't like, do you get that same sort of attachment to backyard chickens?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they all have names,
Oh,
obviously, because otherwise,
okay.
how could we know which one we're talking about? Yes, I think that there are some people that they still consider them livestock. You know, they just get the breeds that are going to lay them the most eggs. They get five of the same breed, so they can't tell them apart. You know, and then there's the people in the middle who they get different breeds because they look different, and they know that Martha is different than Sally, and they name them all whatever. And that's kind of like where I fall. You know, they all have names. I consider them pets, not quite as petty as a cat or dog, but very friendly and affectionate. I talk to them and spend time with them, whatever. And then you've got on the other end of the spectrum, the people who let them in their house and they let them sit on the couch and watch TV with their kids. And that's sort of, I can't get behind that because they
Okay, so
still
do they
are.
poop in your house then? They do. Okay.
Yeah, and people put diapers on them.
Oh
And
my.
I mean, cleaning chicken diapers is not something that I have any interest in doing. They don't belong in the house.
Okay.
So I kind of, you know, I'm in the middle here. I name them, I consider them pets, but they belong outside
Yeah.
because bottom line, they are farm animals. And not only
Yeah.
that, they're happier. Your chicken does not want to be sitting on the couch watching TV with your kid. You
And
know, it,
am I right that people knit them like little hats and stuff? Because I've seen
they
that online.
do. They
Yeah.
do. They knit them hats and sweaters and they paint their nails and like
Oh
that's,
my. Okay.
yeah, that's a bit
Okay.
much.
Well, see, it's tricky for me. So I am a very like maternal being. I like taking care of things. But then also my first job happened to be at the San Francisco Zoo, and like we fed baby chicks to other animals. And that's how I learned like the baby chick still has a yolk inside. Like it's fascinating to me. But because of like, I don't know, like maybe, I don't know, Dr. Phil would do a field day on my brain. But I'm able to compartmentalize sometimes something like, oh, okay, well, a hawk swooped down and ate your chicken. Like, okay, well, that's life. But then I also sound callous and mean and heartless. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's and it's I mean, everything wants to eat your chickens, and that honestly is the hardest part. Like that is day after day, it's a constant battle. You know, you have to have the chickens in a pen, but they like to be out in the yard, and then I feel bad. And we actually had a near miss the other day. Like I literally saw the hawk swoop down and land on my chicken. And of course I ran out screaming like a mad woman, and the chicken was fine. But that was like the closest call we've had in years and years and years. But yeah, I mean, they're even people who raise meat animals, you know. I'm not like vegetarian or vegan or whatever. I'm
Right.
a total hypocrite. I don't eat our chickens, but I do eat chicken. So whatever. Call me a hypocrite.
Okay.
I don't care. I
No,
own
no,
it.
no, the,
You
no,
know.
that's actually good to know. So when they stop laying eggs, you don't go out there and crack their neck and
No,
fry it up.
absolutely not. I mean, no,
Okay.
because and at that point, I mean, whatever. Just go buy a chicken if you need to eat the chicken that badly. You know what I mean? No,
Okay.
they live out their lives and they, you know, die a peaceful death and I bury them and put rocks around
Oh,
it and
that's
whatever.
really
But
sweet. Okay. That's very
Yeah,
sweet.
but I have the utmost respect for people who do raise meat animals because I like what a farmer said to me once, you know, because I said to him, how can you like even if you don't name them, because that's the whole thing. People are like, don't name or whatever, you're still feeding that animal and you are looking it in the eye and you're raising it and you're nursing it to health and it's sick, whatever. And this farmer said to me, he said, I can raise meat animals because I know that they have had the best life possible right up until that last moment. And like that like tears me up every time. I think I literally started
No,
crying when
I
he said
think
that.
you're absolutely correct. And I think one of the reasons I've never wanted yet, and I'm not dead yet, so I reserve the right to change my mind. One of the reasons I haven't gotten into having more animals that aren't like pets, like dogs or cats or rabbits, is because I worry about me becoming too attached and taking care of things. 'Cause you're right, like when I worked at the zoo, I didn't have that attachment, but I also it wasn't like something that was on like I just wasn't emotionally attached then. But now I can't like go on a walk in the rain and see worms on the sidewalk. I have to save the worm. I just have to.
Yeah, I think it's different when it's in your backyard. And I think that's one reason that chickens have become so popular because they're one of the few animals that you can sort of reap the benefits without, you know, killing that animal. Like, I mean, I happen to love rabbit. Like if I see rabbit on a menu at a restaurant, I'll order it. Could I ever raise meat rabbits? Absolutely not. You know, so you
Yeah.
can raise the chickens and get those eggs and you don't have to kill the chicken. And I think that, you know, I can't see the average soccer mom raising meat rabbits in her backyard. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like it's something that
Yeah.
people can wrap their heads around, even though, I mean, 2 generations ago, 3 generations ago, every family was probably
Yeah.
raising a lot of their own meat and the kids were going out and
Yeah.
probably processing the meat and didn't think, I mean, we used to eat my grandmother's chickens. And I didn't think anything of it as a kid. And now, like, absolutely not. I can't even imagine eating one of our
No,
chickens.
I
So.
agree. And like watching like Babe the Pig movie and that kind of stuff. Like intellectually, I totally get all of the things. And that's farm life and that's what you do. But emotionally, it's tricky.
Yeah.
And I
And
like that you've
there's a humane way to do it. And, buying from local farms and hoping that the animals are treated well, like animals shouldn't be abused so we can eat them. But, like I said, I'm not a vegetarian, so I'm realistic. I also know I
No.
could never raise cows because I love cheeseburgers. And I don't think, like, I have trouble cooking a whole chicken, like roasting a whole chicken. I can do like, chicken breast or tenderloins because it doesn't look like our chickens.
The
You know what I
animal.
mean? I need like a little bit of separation.
It's interesting that you brought up the rabbit. So my grandma's name, well, her nickname, but everybody called her that, was Grandma Bunny. And she got that name because as a child, they raised meat rabbits during the Depression, and part of her job was to go out and take care of them. And intellectually, of course, I understand all of that, but like my oldest has Lucy the bunny, and the idea of even if we're starving, eating Lucy, like it's just I can't connect. But then also I'm
Yeah.
not in that situation. And so because I'm not in that situation, I feel like I have no say, no judgment, no anything. So there, yeah.
No, I would be hard. And again, if we're not in that situation, I would be hard pressed to eat any of our chickens or ducks. Wild turkeys are another story. Like I probably could handle that better, but I probably would try to survive on like seeds and nuts and twigs and stuff. It would be like a very, very last resort. It would be like eating our cat or something. Like
I know. Yeah.
I
I get
couldn't,
it.
yeah.
I
But
get it.
I think kids who grow up, I've had friends who raise chickens and they do, butcher them. And the kids just matter of factly at dinner will say, "Oh, is this Lucy or is this?" When the kids grow up with it's not strange to them. And like I wasn't part of the whole butcher thing, so it was at my grandparents' house. But I do know that we, ate their chickens, but I wasn't like part of that whole thing. But I think kids are much more resilient, or even when someone loses a chicken, they've said they and their husband are like inconsolable. And the kids are like, "Can we go get a new baby chick?" You know what I mean? Like kids kind of just bounce back from that stuff, I think, in a lot of cases.
I think you're right. I think you're right. So, if you are listening to this and you are thinking or wanting to learn more about backyard chickens, just look up Lisa Steele. She is very Googleable. It's Lisa Steele with an E at the end. And then the website is Fresh Eggs Daily. She has multiple books. She has really all of the information. So you don't need to fact check her because she's done all of the research for you.
Yeah, and I did actually set up a beginner tab. Like there's topic tabs along the top of my blog. I did set up a beginner tab during COVID, just be to try to sort out the few articles that you really really need to read to get into it. But yeah, I know that there are some college courses that use some of my blogs as material for
Wow,
the
that's
courses.
very cool, Lisa.
Yeah. Texas A&M, they actually invited me down because they were growing grubs and mealworms and stuff, whatever. But yeah, I've had a couple of professors contact me and tell me that they use my content for their courses. And that's a huge honor because I do really do a lot of research. I also have had the luck to be able to contact pretty much anybody, whether it's someone at ManaPro or someone at a hatchery or whatever, the livestock conservancy, to ask experts, to get really good information, because there's so much, and trial and error doesn't work when you're raising animals. That's not the way to raise. I kind of cringe when these like homesteaders, they buy it this little farm and that's great, and then they proceed to get every animal under the sun, and there's no way that you can properly learn to take care of sheep and goats and chickens and ducks and horses and whatever all at once, and they're animals, and you really you can't take the time to learn. Like you need to know what you're doing going into it, and that's really important.
I think so. And I think we saw that a lot during COVID with people even just buying dogs and puppies and thinking, oh, I'm just gonna on a whim because I'm feeling it right this second, go out and buy something. But it's an actual animal and then hopping on a trend just because everyone else is doing it without taking the time to really see, okay, well, what's my life going to look like in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years?
Or it's Instagrammable, you know,
many
people, you know, we've been hatching chicks and now we have all these roosters and well, like that's something you should have thought about, you know, I saw it back in 2009 with people say in a neighborhood, they can get 5 chickens. So they get their 5 chickens. Well, I'm thinking, you know, chickens only lay eggs for like 5 or 6 years. So now we're 5 years down the road. They can't get any more chickens because they can only have those 5, you know, assuming nothing's happened to them. The kids that wanted the chickens might be in high school or college, don't care about the chickens anymore. So they're not getting eggs. They have these chickens. The chickens might live to be 10 or 12 years old. These poor parents want to retire and travel the world, and they're stuck taking care of these 5 chickens that no one thought through. Like, you got to think through the life cycle of the animal. You know, it's for the animal's life, not just for as long as it's convenient for you, whether that's chickens or dogs or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. What do you think of even Wayfair.com has like chicken coops that you can buy for $150 that look like your grandma's house or things like that. Is that real, or are you just essentially like putting them in plywood and it's not going to be predator proof?
they're probably not going to last more than a season. You know, they're great for maybe your first batch of chicks. You know, it's a small little manageable thing. Put it close to the house. You know, keep checking to make sure it's not falling apart.
Yeah.
We have one. I mean, they're great for if you have a mother hen hatching babies, or if you have a sick chicken, or you bring a new one in, you want to separate it. Like, those little starter coops are great for a lot of things, but as like the forever home, absolutely not. I had a friend who had ducklings in one, and it wasn't too far from her house, and she was in a neighborhood, and a raccoon just took the whole thing apart one night. I mean, it's,
If you can put it together in 45 minutes, that might be a sign that it's not too sturdy.
With not real tools, but that little L-shaped thing, you know, that comes in the, I mean, it's if you're going to spend money, you really need to have something secure for them. And that kills me too, is when people get an animal and then, you know, whether one is sick or injured or whatever the case may be. And then I say, well, you know, separate it, whatever. Well, I don't really have the space to separate it. I don't really have the money to see a vet. I don't really this, I don't really that. Like, when you get an animal, that's your responsibility and you need to do what you need to do for them. And if you didn't have space to separate one that was sick, or if you didn't, you know, people just need to be really responsible, because animals are a responsibility.
They are.
So.
They are.
End of that soapbox rant.
No, but it's true. But I think a lot of what I talk about on the podcast and slowing down is thinking things through and playing it out. Like, okay, this might be a good idea right now, but if it's still a good idea, it'll be a good idea in a few weeks or a few months. And that's when you know it's real and you're like following a pull, versus like just being pushed into the next thing. Something that's a good idea will still be a good idea after a good night's sleep.
Yeah, that's true. And it's really hard. Like, I can't even go to the feed store this time of year because there are baby chicks. And of course, I'm going to bring like a box full home, which I don't really need at the moment, whatever. But, you know, maybe for you, the good idea might instead be finding a neighbor who raises chickens and buying fresh eggs, or going to the farmer's market and buying from a local farm. Like, having your own chickens might not be right for you, but there's still something that you can do. Like, we were talking about, you know, the homesteading thing. Like, you don't have to can every vegetable. You don't need to grow every vegetable. You don't need to, you know, like make granola bars, use a porta potty. And like, you can decide what works for you and where you can like go back to the basics or cut corners or whatever. You don't need to do it all.
Yeah. It's interesting. And then I know we're running tight on time, but what just popped in my mind, because we're both pretty frugal, is some people think they're going to save money by learning how to can or learning how to do all these things. And that's just such a sunk cost fallacy, that you're going to save money by ripping out your backyard and learning how to grow all these things. Yeah.
Well, when eggs went up to $12 a dozen, I think maybe that was the initial startup, you know, cost you a little bit to get everything set up, but down the road, but like now, you know, 15 years in, our eggs are pretty economical, because I've already got everything set up, but you know, whatever. And I've learned how to cut costs and all this other stuff. But yeah, when you first get started, it's much cheaper just to buy eggs. But that's not really the point of it either, because there are so many other benefits.
Yeah, there is. And I think also when people are trying to figure out like who they are and what their identity is, they glom on to different hobbies. And I like the idea of when you're picking out hobbies, you do something that's good for your brain and something that's good for your body. And in this situation, it's both, because caring for something is so mentally gratifying. And then just, I mean, as far as being good for your body, there's no real other way than to actually be able to track what you're eating and know where it comes from. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point.
Very cool. Lisa, thank you. Thank you for spending so much time with us. Please find Lisa. She is very Googleable. You can get all of her information. She's got a breadth of knowledge on her website. The name of the TV show is Welcome to My Farm. And I just think you're great. So thank you.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Do you have a slow living story to share? Leave me a voicemail at stephanieoday.com/podcast with any questions, comments, feedback, or testimonials, and I will be sure to include it in an upcoming episode. Also, if you found value in this episode, please share it with your family and friends and subscribe through your favorite podcast provider. The more you share, comment, and leave positive reviews, the more people we can reach and share the slow living lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have an absolutely wonderful day.